the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 253.
Kaputsky. That's right.
And this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
And Kaputsky. What? Why are we calling it that, you guys?
Because you told me.
Because Kaspersky is Kaputsky.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. They have we'll
a
get
little
into
hacking
the,
problem.
They had a little issue. Poor Eugene. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyways.
Okay.
Well, before we get in, that'll be our news segment. So we'll start with what have we been doing for the last couple of weeks? Who wants to start? Tony? Professor Tony, I mean?
Yes, congrats.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, I saw that in LinkedIn. I thought, oh, my gosh.
He added professor
to
his profile.
I did.
I know another professor.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. I know three now. Two of them are law professors.
Yeah. When you type, do you get to hold your pinky out on the keyboard?
It's only if he's going to tea.
No, but somebody else is like, well, you're if you're on a 3-hour cruise, then you get to you're like the second most important person.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Thanks, but no, it's going all right. It's going.
It's going. Having fun.
Don't pay attention. They
bring back memories.
Still falling asleep in class.
Right. Can you beat them with a ruler? Yeah. Or a network cable?
Otherwise, it's pretty good. Yeah, with the network cable.
Yeah, crack that network cable whip.
But otherwise, no, it's pretty good. Just keep my Mondays busy with it. Other than that, I was I got to use... like my first legitimate use of SpinWrite the other day.
Oh, really?
It was on my FreeNAS box, and I was wondering whether like there was a few errors popping up, and I was wondering if it was like a legitimate problem or if it's something that just FreeNAS was complaining about. So I did the SpinWrite thing on all my drives, and it took, because I have 5 2-terabyte drives, it took like a day and a half for it to run through all the drives. And then everything came up clean. So I'm like, sweet. So I rebooted and things got started up. You know, I do have one question about, is it Beehive? Is the VM stuff?
Uh-huh.
I have 2 Ubuntu machines that are set to automatically boot when I start up the system, and they don't. So, I mean, Beehive says turn on.
Are they plugged in?
Beehive tells them to turn on, and then when I get into or when I go to access the system, that's not running. You know, it's inaccessible. So I connect with VNC to it, and it looks like a blank screen. I click in the screen, and then all of a sudden, Grub comes up and it's booting.
So I have been bugged by a lot of people because I have a lot of FreeNAS videos on YouTube to do a Beehive video. People think I'm just not doing it. No, I tried, and I didn't like Beehive because that is only among the many bugs. I've actually found where it crashed my FreeNAS server. So crashing the rest of a file server that my systems depend on means it very difficult to do reviews of Beehive. I just don't feel it's ready for prime time.
I was going to say, so it's still a little rough around the edges.
Real rough around the edges.
Yeah. So the issue is one of those VMs is what I do remote, how I remote into my home network.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't... if it reboots when I'm gone, I can't remote in to fix it. Mm. And really what I should do is just set up, with my pfSense, just set up a VPN connection into my, and then I'd be able to do it. And I just haven't sat down to do it yet.
That's because you're too busy teaching.
I am. Maybe, you know, there's this guy I know that knows a lot about pfSense. Maybe I can ask him.
I know a thing.
I know that guy too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's going to be I'm so excited because 2.4, I've already done some videos on it, but I'm going to do a full in-depth because every year, this will be my third year doing an in-depth video on pfSense, and 2.4 just came out, so.
Awesome. You know, and speaking of that, I'm supposed to try to coordinate your appearance at a BSD.
That would be a good semi-bug topic as well.
Yes, and I'll be there Tuesday. They're going to be talking about, what the heck are they talking about? I forgot, but anyway, I'll be there, so I'll talk So, Tom, I might text you on Tuesday to try to get something set up. Have you check your schedule?
Oh.
So it'd be Tuesday evening if you're just to have you check and see if what they've got.
And it may come out Tuesday, so.
Oh.
I'll let you know.
All right. Well, good. Good.
All right. Back to
you. All right, Tony.
And then the last thing was.
A little sidebar.
Yeah, sidebar.
The last thing I'm doing, I'm building a website. So it's the first website I've built in like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
Are you building it from scratch?
No, I'm using WordPress. Okay. Framework WordPress, but it's for my Emish or my Italy trip, and really it's an overall for all like projects, all the students have gone on this trip throughout the years, and I'm just now starting to build it out, and and it's cool. It's just the what's it called, the theme.
Okay.
Theme, yeah, theme. Close. The theme that I'm using is travel related. Mm-hmm. So normally a person that travels a lot would use this theme to build their website. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom, there's a plugin that's like geo something. And it puts a little map, a Google map at the top of the post to say, this is where I was.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
But and then you put your post.
Now, do you have to have location or something turned on for that to happen?
No, you
put it in.
You manually put it in.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I could like that.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool. So
I try to keep my location turned off as much as possible.
Right. And it wasn't working at first. Speaking and then I started looking into it. And you have to have a Google Maps API key now to do it. Mm. So it's free. It was easy to get. It was literally like somebody in the forum had a link over to it. I clicked the link. I said, yes, get key. And then I copied it. And that was it. It was
nice.
Easy. Yeah. Well, and then I had to paste it into the website. But that's what I was up till 2 a.m. last night working on that.
Fun.
Yeah. It was fun.
I just turned my location off.
Right. And the website, if anybody wants to go out and look, I've got some pictures on it right now, but I haven't really, like, it's going to take time to, it's emish.it. So .it is Italian.
Ah.
And so it's all about the Emish website or Emish study abroad going to Italy. So
nice.
I thought that'd be cool. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that'd be fun. We'll have to take a look at it, Tony.
Yeah.
Will you have a feedback form on it?
Pompeii.
I will. Yep.
I'm kidding.
Actually, and then there's links. I set up a Twitter account, and I set up
a touristy kind of thing as far as, when I say touristy, just sort of the sights and sounds of Italy? Or is it going to be something relative to some of the things that people did that kind of apply back to
the meat of it is going to be the projects that people worked on while they were there.
While they were there, okay.
And what it is...
You probably already said that, didn't you?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
And so what it is that when the students go, you know, there's like 10 sites we go to.
Okay.
And of those 10 sites, every student goes in looking for something different at each site. Because like my project was identity. You know, somebody else's project was sexuality of how women was treated
different.
Yeah, how they were treated different in throughout the ages. At each site.
That would be easy to answer. No.
So what I'm going to set it up is you say, right. Well, I want to look at Pompeii. And then you're going to see all the posts of different people and the different things that they looked at. So you can get a lot of different perspectives of what Pompeii was like from these different
That's
projects.
Very good.
Yeah. You know, there was other people that did like physical security and, you know, all sorts of things like that.
Yeah. Well, that would be a fascinating topic, I think, especially with all the information and news that have come out in the last 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
There's some nifty pictures here.
There are. That's what I've been doing too.
Oh, thanks.
I did notice, though, that we are all accessing this over an insecure HTTP connection.
If there was only some company that would help you encrypt it. Now, let's all get this encrypted. Let's help Tony.
So actually, that's my next project. Because it's a shared hosted setup, I don't have access directly in to be able to set it up myself. So I have to open a ticket with A2 Hosting. And they said they'll do it. I just
You haven't had time.
And then now I'm at the point is I have 2 months and my contract is up. And the guy I work with is kind of our project running this thing. He is saying, well, maybe we should go to AWS or something else. Because now he's like the AWS.
Azure.
No, we're not going to Azure. But he's like the AWS guy at his new work. So he's like, I want to check it out and price it out, and we can, and he just hasn't gotten back to me. So that's the real reason I held off on it, but I just need to put in a ticket for them to go through and get certs on set up for all of them.
I bet Walmart's going to have a cloud it, services.
Yeah, they do.
You can
Cloud
store
Mart.
Stuff in it. Yeah. Cloud Mart.
Cloud Mart. That's what they should have called it.
I'm pretty sure.
Jet, what kind of name is Jet?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they have Yeah, Jet. Yeah,
no, I'm talking about like AWS.
Yeah, Jets, they have their own. They're
I thought Jet was a commerce thing.
It is, but they have a, they have their own.
They also have cloud.
We actually covered it 7 episodes ago.
Yeah.
I must have been gone.
And they have their own
all right.
coin, e-coin. And,
yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, okay. I'm sorry I missed that episode. I was probably out of town.
If they get too much more stuff, they have a currency. They have a whole IT infrastructure. If they get too much more, they're going to be a nation state of themselves.
They Well, they're bigger than a lot of nation states.
Yeah.
Just economically.
Right.
As far as GDP is concerned.
we should continue.
We should move on before we get into the rant.
So, so Mary, what did you do?
Well, what I did is I upgraded to Plasma 5.11. I upgraded, I think my Kden Live, you know, they came out with a little incremental upgrade.
Updates.
Yeah, they came out with that. And one thing that caught my attention about Plasma 5.11 is that the Vault, that Plasma Vault system, I believe, was released with it. And I didn't realize this, and maybe this was just something that was unique to my setup, but I had to separately install it. It was not automatically included.
Yeah. I don't know if it is or not on KDE Neon. I haven't checked because I didn't have a use case for the Vault. I've seen it in the notes, but I have no use case for it. It's
so,
novel.
Yeah, it is. But here's what I did. I went ahead and installed it, and I had a chance to play around with it a little bit. when you first initiate it, you're going to get a little locked icon in your system tray, and then you'll get a little box on your desktop, and you can go ahead. It says create vault, so I created a vault, and then what's very nice about it is that you can then say, I want this vault available across all of my activities because, you know, KDE has the underutilized but very cool activities feature.
Yeah.
And so you can either use it across all activities or specify an activity. And I have two activities. I have a podcast activity, and then I have my just general desktop use activity. So I went ahead as a test. I put it into the – I said it can only be accessed in the podcast activity. And what was really cool about this is that when you go into the podcast activity, you can get in there and access the files. You open up, you've got to provide a password, et cetera. You can either encrypt it using, CryFS. Are you guys familiar with that, CryFS?
Mm-mm.
Or Inc? Is it ENCFS?
Yes.
Yeah, ENCFS.
Which has a security problem. it apparently has a security, because there was a security notice that was presented to me when I installed it.
Yeah, the security thing, if I remember right, that was released a couple, like 6 months ago. And there's like a lot of different things you have to like compound on top of each other to get it.
Okay. Well, they're still presenting the security caution if you're gonna use that particular encryption method. Excuse me. But anyway, so when you leave the activity, if you make it specific to the activity and then you leave the activity, it will automatically close. So if you go back in, you've got to reopen it again. So I'm thinking what I'm going to try is set it up so that it is in my Dropbox folder. I want to see if I can put stuff into it and then how it ends up in Dropbox, if it ends up encrypted in Dropbox, which will be nice if that's indeed how it works.
Okay.
You know, yeah. But I would also recommend if people have not tried KDE Activities that they give it a shot.
I've had problems with it. I may give it a try since they've updated again, but I had problems with it causing crashes.
Okay.
And layout problems with KDE, Kden Live, which is I set up an activity for my video editing. It didn't go well.
Okay.
It actually caused me grief.
Okay, well, never mind. Everybody but Tom should give it a try.
Well, if I do something, I do it because it's advanced and I have all these things I have open. And didn't work quite as good as I hoped.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that was probably the best part about the whole upgrade process is I got a chance to give that a try, and it seems to work pretty well. So
cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of what I did. Looked at my Iceland pictures. I'm trying to put a movie together of Iceland with using. I'm just basically grouping my stuff into different days, and then I'm going to sort of sort it, and then I'm going to drop it into Kdenlive and do some editing. Yeah, so I'll let you know when that's done. That's about it for me.
Phil,
I have been working, being on call, and we've been finding a new house. We've gotten pre-approved on a few mortgages. And
a few mortgages.
Yes.
There's different options.
You know, you don't just carry around different mortgages with you.
I had one once. I usually only have one at a time.
So it has been a quite busy past 2+ weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereabouts in the general area?
Still southeast Michigan. I can tell you after the show. Not a problem there.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. But it's also right now in Michigan, there's a low inventory of houses, as Phil's acutely aware, I'm sure. There's just not enough on the market right now. So it's a whole other issue.
It's been fun so far, but we believe we have the place picked out.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome. It's cool.
It meets all of our criteria, and a map that we drew at the bar months and months ago.
At the bar.
It matches this napkin perfectly.
It worked. It worked.
It has everything except for the bear cave and the orc pit. But, I mean, I could just build that myself, you know.
Of course.
Of course. So every house should have an orc pit.
Yeah. And speaking of pits and caves and that type of thing, I want to mention, I went up to, there's a magic shop in Clawson called Wonderground Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that owns it took me on a little tour of the basement, which sounds kind of suspicious, but no, it wasn't. Actually, it used to be a speakeasy. And he showed me the door. There used to be a now this is at, for those of you who are from Southeast Michigan, are familiar probably with Main Street and 14 Mile Road.
Mm-hmm.
In Clawson, that's kind of like the center of their city, their little city. Anyway, there was a tunnel that led from the southwest corner of that intersection under the intersection to the northeast corner of it. It has long ago been walled up and not, no longer available. But as far as deliveries and all sorts of stuff that used to come in, it would come in. And then they had you had to kind of get into that little speakeasy. And it was really pretty interesting tour.
Yeah, there's a lot of history on that. There was a lot of rum runners.
Isn't there still a current one over there? You have to knock just right to get in.
Oh, there might be. There might be.
I don't know if it's Clawson or somewhere over there. It's something.
You have to get the password from their Facebook page, and it changes every day. Something like that.
Yeah. And it's hidden. I don't know if it's behind a Coke machine or next to one or something. I don't know.
Or the Bad Luck Cocktail Bar. You ever heard of that one? That's in downtown Detroit. And they have these very esoteric cocktails. And there's the whole theme of the place is a tarot card theme. So very, very strange.
There's also a speakeasy theme place in Ferndale. So that's really cool, too. I've been
to. The Oakland Novelty Company?
Maybe. It's got a. I don't know. But anyways, we're going to get way off topic if we start talking about bars. As much as we enjoy them, all these people that are listening to us overseas those are far away. If you come to Detroit, message us. We'll hook you up. Was that it for Phil?
Yep. How about you, Tom?
How about me? Lots of things. So I finished my whole tutorial on Zen Server and posted that last night, which was a Zen Server, FreeNAS, and iSCSI tutorial, how to set up with your storage servers for your virtual machines and some fun stuff like that. That was a fun thing to do because I learned that FreeNAS and Zen Server, they hate each other on NFS, a lot. And
hate each other?
Oh, yeah. There's some arguments.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah, they just the way that Zen Server implemented NFS is not the way it was implemented over on the FreeNAS side. So if you do connect the two devices that way, you'll spend hours pulling your hair out like Tom did, trying to figure out that I thought I was doing something wrong because it was too smart for the forums until I decided to go into the forums after I spent a few hours and realized it wasn't me. It's a flaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved everything to iSCSI, and I decided that after my learning experience, I thought iSCSI was more complicated than it was, so I did an entire tutorial on it. It's actually a lot easier to set up than I thought. But the video is an hour long because it's everything from loading Zen Server on a blank server all the way through. Now, speaking of FreeNAS, We destroyed some FreeNAS systems and made a fun video.
Did you light them on fire? Or
high voltage is how we ended one of them, and which was fun because we were pulling the memory out and showing the resilience of FreeNAS that you can just yank the memory out randomly and the drives will still rebuild themselves because FreeNAS on ZFS isn't a brilliant thing.
I think those kinds of videos are really fun when you start to do stuff. Somebody did one of Ubuntu where they had it running and they had run a command that was basically going to destroy it. And it just took a little while until finally the system crashed. But it was kind of fun to watch it still try to do stuff as it was slowly being destroyed.
We finally decided.
I don't know why.
Yeah, we had a flaky motherboard to start with, and that was so that even when the hardware goes flaky, that CFS after many reboots randomly reading and writing will still contain files. And then high voltage was the final way we destroyed it. After we destroyed the motherboard with high voltage, we unplugged all the hard drives, plugged them into another ZFS machine, and they worked fine. I imported the array. That actually got the attention of the people who make FreeNAS, and they said, "We love your video," and they retweeted it. And then they sent us shirts, and they sent us a letter, and then we started talking. And they're like, "You want to do that on an enterprise piece of equipment?" I'm like, "I would love to." They said, "But skip the high voltage part." So I actually, because I have to send this back, because they sent me a TrueNAS X10 server. You ever seen them?
Have not.
They are beautiful.
Sounds expensive.
Without hard drives, they start at around $6,000 before you put hard drives in them. It has a really neat redundant motherboards, redundant power supplies. It runs high availability inside of a 2U case. So dual redundant motherboards that both can see the RAID array. I don't know what magic caused that or how that works. I'm learning. and that's part of the review we're doing. So they asked us to review the product, but also once we have it all configured with high availability, unplugging the motherboards live, they got a way to do that. You can actually slide the motherboard out of the back of the machine, which is cool. You can replace the motherboard while it's running because it's got more than one. And they automatically fail over to each other. And it's a really, really interesting setup. It's a beautiful piece of hardware they sent us. They shipped us all the drives and everything with it. So we're excited. Unfortunately, my guys are like, "Do we get to keep this?" I'm like, "I wish." You know what the price tag on this thing is? They loaned it to us to do all the testing. So we're going to be doing a thorough review of that. So who knew that, you know, breaking old motherboards with FreeNAS led to a massive RAID array landing? It was on the table. I put it in the other room to not be in the way of our podcast. It is pretty heavy, so
that's really cool.
It's a really neat device.
I'd never heard of somebody doing redundant motherboards like that.
It's really neat, and it's why they've got a lot. They're trying to get more attention because it's such a unique high availability storage array, and it's running open source software, so it's right up the alley of stuff that we all like, that people are interested in, and they're very open about how they're doing everything. So there's actually a management network card on each one, and then dual network interfaces on each one as well. And you can get different add-in cards and things like that. So if you need, you know, 10 gigabit or fiber channel, whatever your back-end connection is. So this is pretty cool. This is pretty neat stuff. I'm excited about that. Other things I've been doing besides the finally getting excited because my YouTube crossed the 10,000 mark, but it's actually at like 10,500 right now.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's been a lot of fun and cranking out more and more videos. Then the last thing, only side personal thing, is I love the fall, so I've been spending more time riding my motorcycles. Then I broke one of them, and now I got it put back together. So now I got two motorcycles that I've been off-roading with. I take friends with me who want to learn how to ride.
You broke one of your motorcycles?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like something I would say. What did you do?
Yeah, well, the tank got messed up, and yes, I'd ordered a new gas tank for it, which, see, it's always a challenge because I used to like newer motorcycles, and then I decided there's no challenge in trying to hill climb on a newer motorcycle. It just goes up the hill. But I have 1970s Hondas. I know.
I am shocked.
This is the weird mental problems I have. I've got into my 1970s Hondas, and they're the old Honda CT series, which is kind of like a cult following of them, and I'm among that. It's all the most basic, rudimentary, no electronics. They use the old-style ignition system and points, and it's fascinating to me. So I'm working on technology that was actually designed in the 50s and carried on until the 70s when they quit making them. And so I've got a couple of those, and they're just neat to me because they're so old. And, you know, I'm talking in 1 second about this TrueNAS, and that's my, like, fun stuff I'm doing. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I get to work on really, really old technology that's a 6-volt electrical system and everything else. So it's kind of fun taking it apart and working on them. So, and it's more challenging to keep these things going and go on trips on them than it is to the new ones. Are just boring. Nothing breaks
until it breaks down and you're miles from home.
Yeah, that's a risk. But that's also that's the excitement of it, because that me and my friend went on about we went on a 60-mile trip on them. We just took off for the day and went out deep in the woods and got lost, and it was fun.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yep, that's been my last few weeks.
Yeah. Busy guy.
I try.
All right, so I guess we're going on to feedback, right?
Feedback. Do we have any of that?
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
I don't believe we have any feedback in emails. How about on the site?
I haven't seen any. Let me check the site again. Actually, I'm not logged in.
Yeah, I do not see any either.
All right, well, that's easy.
Yeah. It's a short segment. It's okay that Phil talked over it. We can cut the whole segment out now.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
Well, we still want to say that if you want to send us feedback, then...
Absolutely. Please send us some feedback. We love feedback.
show@smlr.us.
And let us know what you thought of our Microsoft stuff. I don't care if you hated it or loved it. Let us know one way or another. We love the feedback. It helps us guide us in our future ramblings.
That's right. Yeah, do we...
What should we ramble more about? What should we ramble less about?
There you go.
That's like my Tom's summary of feedback.
All right. Well, I think if there's no feedback, then I suspect it's probably time to move on to our next segment.
Actually, it says there's 23 feedbacks on the website, but I suspect most of them are spam. Yeah.
How do you know, though? All right.
Because it's on our website.
Have you talked to those Nigerian princes?
No.
What if one really tried to give away the money?
Yeah, that's terrible if they did. All right.
The thing, what it is most of them look innocuous, but they don't like refer to anything in the web page, and they're like really general, saying, "Oh, I love your content on this," or "You have such a great base of knowledge." And then if you look at the username, they have this big long URL that they're trying to get somebody to come over to their website.
I get a lot of those on YouTube. YouTube's spam filter works really well, but there's a lot of people who just make random long sentenced comments of compliments that I don't understand why, because you can't insert a URL in YouTube links. Well, you can, but everyone has to be approved. So you can insert a URL, has to be approved, or it doesn't get posted. Mm. So they never even start a URL. They just put long complimentary links. Sometimes they're a paragraph of compliments. But I know they're not real because if you look at the user.
But Tom, do you read the whole thing?
Of course.
I'm kidding.
I love the backhanded compliment I got the other day. I was like, this guy wrote something really nice. And then the second half is totally bashing me on the video of how I did everything wrong in a video. The first one is how he loved every other video except for this video. And he had to bail 10 minutes in to a 20-minute video.
Oh, you know why? It's because you're on YouTube doing stuff.
That's pretty much.
If that person was on YouTube doing stuff, then they probably wouldn't be saying that.
Right. So
everyone can be a keyboard commando.
They all are.
Indeed.
So we had one from Carl, our friend Carl.
Carl Miller. Yes.
He says that he almost donated a show, but he didn't see a spot for a t-shirt. The size of the t-shirt.
Back to what you said, we need hats and swag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Merch. So we're working on that. This is something that I could ask my wife to design if everybody's in for it.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
She makes
cool stuff.
She makes designs for her different workout groups for Wayne State.
Oh, wow.
And so she made the serious. Most famous post on Wayne State.
That
came up with my Wayne State
friends.
Yes,
she did. She also makes shirts for our friend who streams on Twitch TV.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
We just need design ideas.
Yeah, I think we've made a decision.
Okay.
Well, what's wrong with that design idea?
We'll talk about that.
This one there.
This is what Tom came up with.
Yeah, Tom's not a designer, but, you know.
Minus the...
I don't know, Tom. I like it. Yeah. But maybe some artful arrangement
of it. I
like
that.
Yeah, we had these made up, what, 2 years ago? Year and a half ago?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah.
Because it was at the not last PamCon, but PamCon before, so close to 2 years.
I think we've gone through all of our t-shirts that we had at that point. So we don't have any to give away right now, but we're going to put together a project or a plan and stuff and let you guys know.
Yes.
We did have somebody donate, though, right?
Yes, we did.
We had someone give us money. That's feedback.
So I am... Where is that?
I feel
he was a friend of the show. Which is helpful because of just some of the equipment stuff that...
Yeah.
You know, little things so
like, I have nothing to say, but I'll throw money at you because I like you. And I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, that's right. That we very much appreciated that.
I'm looking for that email.
We should set up a Patreon. Make it easier.
Would be a good idea.
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely. that's a great idea.
Now we just come up with work for ourselves.
Right.
Hope you guys like all this feedback we have for us.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
It was John. I'm looking. I don't know what he didn't say whether we can specifically use his last name or not. So,
all right. Well, we'll just respect.
Well, thank you, John.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We replied in emails and let him know. Thank you as well.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Time for some distros.
Yeah.
All right.
Next segment.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Yes, that's right. Distro Fever.
Yes.
Fever.
PF Sense is right at the top of DistroWatch.
I saw that and I thought of you.
Because 2.4 is neat. They made some cool changes based on the latest version of FreeBSD. One of the bigger changes is it's loaded on top of ZFS, or at least that's an option now. So you can even build a Z3 RAID array to run your PF Sense on. So if you really need super redundancy, before it had mirroring support, but now it's got full-blown ZFS and all the fun features of it. So that also, because I can do an in-place upgrade of my current PF Sense systems, that doesn't allow you to rewrite the file system in ZFS. So I'm actually probably going to reload some of them to have ZFS as the underlying. Also, they've added a lot of ARM support because they have some. They have actually several ARM devices coming out for PF Sense. So
okay.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, they've released one of them that I did a review of, and now they have another one that's going to be available soon. It's another ARM device, low-powered, high-speed, so pretty cool. They also deprecated the, I think, 32-bits deprecated, and NanoBSD is deprecated. They are no longer going to support those. I think the whole NanoBSD project is kind of just falling away. It's the concept that you could load something really, really tiny. Uh-huh. The reality is it's so inexpensive for storage that... And in PFSense, it's not a big product anyways. I can't buy the small pieces needed for that. Like, nothing I buy is so small that it needs it unless I'm using 10-year-old hardware. Why would I?
Yeah, that's true. I think, just in looking at this list, we had, I think, Chakra Linux just came out. That's a KDE-centric distribution, which I think we've reviewed on the show a few years ago.
Yeah, we have. They always had really cool... icons and themes and stuff.
Yeah, they do, and they are very cutting edge as far as the latest and greatest of whatever is in the KDE repositories. So they're very cutting edge on that front. The only thing that caught my eye and was it prompted me to consider putting together a distro review of it was NST, and that of course stands for Network Security Toolkit. They just released their latest version back on the 8th of October. I went ahead actually and downloaded it, and then much to my horror, I realized that it's the Anaconda installer because it's Fedora-based. And I'm sad to report that installer, or at least that partitioning part, the rest of it's fine. That partitioning part is still as bad as it was a couple years ago. So,
really?
It's unfortunate, but I think I'll still try to keep whacking at it and see if I can... Well, the problem is that I got a report saying, hey, the install was successful. So I'm thinking, great. So I try to boot it, and I boot to just the prompt. So there's something either in the boot, obviously, and I checked to see that the thing was bootable. I did all that stuff, and it didn't seem to help. So I'll go back, do a little bit more investigating. What
prompt? The grub prompt?
Oh, no, it wasn't even a grub prompt. It was just a single little underline.
Oh.
So. Yeah, it was.
Now, because we won't have a show in between them, but I will mention that the 19th is the Ubuntu 17.10 release date.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be, we'll be probably mentioning it in our next show, but the reviews, because they're at the final code freeze, so for the most part.
Is that the Aardvark one?
Yeah.
Artie Aardvark?
Artful Aardvark.
Artful, okay.
Yeah, we went through all the alphabet.
I was just going to make a comment about that.
Yeah.
Well,
it didn't start at A. It started with Dapper Duck. What was
something
it?
Like Daffy that. Duck? Yeah. So we've almost gone through the whole alphabet.
Draper. Yeah.
Wasn't it Draper? or Dapper. No, maybe it was Dapper Duck. Yeah, Dapper or something.
Or something like that. So, yeah.
It's been, and it's pretty cool. I did a review of it even when it was in beta, and it was really nice. And I'm going to do another review of it on my YouTube channel because it's the switching all to GNOME does give it a different look and feel, but they've really polished it up. They've finally something to be excited about is changing it because Ubuntu was stable on Unity for a long time. Whether you loved or hated Unity was another topic, but it was very stable and very predictable. Yep. And once again, they've moved over to GNOME, but they've also made it stable and predictable again with a slightly different interface.
Okay.
Dapper Drake.
Dapper Drake.
Dapper Drake.
Yeah, that was 606.
Wow, that's 11 years ago.
It's been around a while.
Yeah.
And it has been. 11 years. I remember when it first came. It was like Warty Warthog. That was that was another version of it, of Ubuntu.
Well, their naming scheme is, I've always liked their naming scheme.
Yeah, it is kind of fun.
So. I had started at Hardy Heron. That was 804.
Yep, I remember that. And there was Edgy Eft. I had installed that. That was obviously preceded Hardy Heron. I don't know if they even had an F.
They may not have. Warty Warthog was... 410. Was that their first release?
Might have been.
The names are the best.
They are. So, but thanks for the heads up on that, Tom. That's right.
Oh, by the way, sorry, 32-bit people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's officially, there is no 32-bit. So. Time for 64s.
Yeah, it went Warty Warthog, then Horty Hedgehog, then Breezy Badger.
Oh, Breezy Badger.
Horty Hedgehog was, or Horty Hedgehog was 5'4". Breezy Badger was 5'10".
Edgy Eft?
Then Draper, then Edgy. So it was when they hit 606 with Draper, then they started at, you know, going through the alphabet.
Doing it in order, sequence, with the alphabet. Okay.
And so I think Edgy was my first one. It was so 610 or
yeah, I yep, I was probably using the KDE version of it at that time, as of no surprise to anyone,
right?
Hey, but anyway, you know, the one that kind of caught my eye here was Laka.
Yeah, that's in development.
I Laka it a lot. No, it's it turns your computer into a game console. So Tom, have you tried that yet?
I've used it. It's really cool.
I haven't used that one. I'll have to look at that because I haven't played with my RetroPie for a little while. It's got the RetroPie interface, but there's some other one. It's been a while since I've updated it because I just use it. I don't run updates all the time on it because I'm afraid it'll break things because I did an update and it broke things. I got mad because I just want to play video games sometimes.
Yeah.
I know. I was done with Linux projects and going to play video games. It says an update's available. I said yes, and it broke, and I was mad. So now I'm back to doing a Linux project.
Shades of Windows. No, I'll never forget the guy, the Live Gamers. You know, they did that Windows 10 update right in the middle of the live gaming.
No, I'll definitely take a look at that. That's cool.
But Laka is based on the same software that...
the RetroArch.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's RetroArch, and then they go through and do the customize, and then they have a customized UI. And when I ran, like, my RetroPie kind of-ish, it wasn't called RetroPie. I was running Laka.
Right.
And I really liked it. Yeah, it was nice.
See, and Asus has that Tinkerboard, and it has some support for that. There's actually a couple of these. So Raspberry Pi being the original inexpensive, versatile board, there's a couple other ones out there that are great for Linux distros and things like that are just a little bit more higher end with memory on there, but you're still under $100. And they're actually really powerful multi-core machines with, you know, they're about the same size as Raspberry Pi, like the Asus Tinkerboard. So
the Tinkerboard is actually coming down in price too.
What's that?
Tinkerboard is coming down in price.
Yes.
I just saw a Micro Center ad the other day. It's $45 now, and it has a gig more of RAM than what the Pi does.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
wow. And it has 500 megahertz faster. So that's what I was looking at. It's the Pi 3 is a 1.2 quad core with a gig of RAM, and the Tinkerboard is a 1.8.
Yep. Quad core.
Quad core with 2 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
And then it's the same form factor, too. It looked identically the same size and layout of the ports. So I wonder if you can use the same
I was going to ask. I mean, you could basically unplug your Raspberry. Well, I think a distro might create something, but you could then just unplug it from your Raspberry Pi board, plug all the stuff in, including the card. It has a little card slot, right? Or what, how does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's a, it, and the card slot's in the exact same spot. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue is it's based on a different processor.
Okay, right. So that's,
it's yeah, a ROC chip.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's still an ARM chip. It's ARM, 18? I thought I looked that up.
Yeah, and the one of the interesting things about it is, to me as well, is it has gigabit interface on it.
Yeah, and it's not a shared bus.
Right.
That's the big thing. It's gigabit and not shared. And that's the biggest downfall of Raspberry Pi.
For those who haven't run a Raspberry Pi, the Ethernet port shares the bus with the USB ports.
Yeah.
Right. So if anything's happening on the USB at the same time as you're trying to do network
it's
access.
It's going
to
slow down.
Yeah, it's going to slow down to at max, 400 megahertz or 400 megabits a second?
Whatever so USB you don't get. 3 is, I think. Do they have
no,
USB
it's 2.
On it? Oh, okay.
2, yeah. So that's a lot of – like I said, these, for under $100, this is a lot of compute power. And so makes some really neat stuff. I actually was at a demonstration showing that they took – well, you were using a Raspberry Pi, but the concept's the same. Wi-Fi de-authing with a drone, which was fun. So you can fly around and destroy people's Wi-Fi, which I did a Wi-Fi de-authing video. These guys took it and paired it with a drone so they can fly around and Wi-Fi de-auth.
Jeez.
And it's automated. So I have a whole video on it if you're curious about why de-authing is. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing.
It's technically illegal, so you should.
Only de-auth your own network. I do comment yep. that at the very beginning of my video.
Only do your own. You know, what's interesting is Cisco access points have that built in. You yep. can de-auth because if somebody brings their own access point into your network and you don't want that there, you can kick them off the network.
Yeah.
So you can de-auth them. The problem is, if you're close enough to another business and you start de-authing the other business,
yeah.
then you can legally get in trouble.
Right.
So
yeah, Cisco actually has their own thing. It's oh,
yeah there's all sorts of pop-ups. When you go to enable that, they're like, make sure you're doing this right, you know, that you have yeah. the right to do this, and this is, you know, you're not kicking somebody else off or blah, blah, blah. There's like 3 windows you have to go through.
Which was actually part of an illegal attack a hotel used to get people to use their Wi-Fi. They de-auth other hotspots.
Really?
Yes, they got in trouble for that. Because they wanted you to pay for theirs. You couldn't bring your own.
Oh.
Anyways, that's all we got for distros before we move into news before we get into all these other subjects.
Mm-hmm. Right. News or symlinking to Tom. I don't know what the difference is. But Tom's news. Anyway, here, let's go on to the tech news.
Tech news and views.
All right.
Now, I will throw this out there because it'll go into a deeper discussion. We'll save the Kaputsky for last. So let's cover all the other topics first that we can run through.
Sounds good.
Yep, sounds good.
Who wants to start?
I've got a few things. I guess I'll start this time. So when we went to the conference the other week, it was a Hyatt Hotel, right?
Yeah.
Hotels are hit by another card breach.
Hyatt?
Yeah. So the Hyatt confirmation.
When did that come out? I missed that.
October 13th. Just
Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Well, that's when this article is. I thought I saw it come through on a different article.
Probably months ago.
Earlier in the week.
So maybe it happened months ago.
Yeah, it's as if you were there between March 18th and July 2nd. Then
we're safe.
You could be. Yeah, we're safe.
You know, I'm going to just interject a question, probably a rhetorical question. Why doesn't the credit card system move to kind of a single transaction model where you generate a where the credit card itself number is not stored there, but a transaction ID?
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how Apple Pay and Google Pay works, where you're just using a nonce to mm-hmm. do one time. So makes it invulnerable to what they refer to as the replay attack.
Yeah.
Because replay attack is what we're seeing here because they store the credit card number and I can use that same credit card number again.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the concept with the chip, but it was horribly implemented. And easily mm-hmm. hacked.
The idea in the U.S.
In the U.S., yeah. There's so much speculation and...
Wait, we're exceptional. Wait.
No. Right. Oh, yeah, exceptional.
That part is horrible.
There was a quote, I'm gonna say it probably a little bit wrong, but I still like the premise of the quote, is magnitudes of ineptitude are almost indistinguishable from malice. And mm-hmm. it was Brian Krebs who said that. And it's one of those things that they're right. We almost like there's a conspiracy. You're like, no, there's that many stupid people involved at the top that don't understand it and don't want to implement it. And it's just weird because we know the technology completely exists. It's in use everywhere but the United States. So what is stopping them? I don't know. They, you know, exactly. It's a lot to change.
Well, so I think the original theory was that the problem is the end business that is accepting the credit cards. So it takes extra work for them to have to change over to the new system. So they thought, we'll make it a little bit easier. Well, that little bit easier actually made it really horribly insecure. And if you're going to make the change, might as well just move right into the hard part. And, you know, because they were going to, I don't know if the plan was to do multi-staged a rollout of chips, but they really borked out on this first one. And if you have to make any kind of change, it should go from the swipe, which is just insecure of data on your card, to something that's secure, not mm-hmm. something that's partly secure. And then maybe sometime in the next 10 years, we might move over to the secure thing.
What is the financial impact to roll out all of this new technology to the end businesses?
Let me get my calculator.
Each business? Yeah. Well, when the original moving over the chip, you have to buy a new card reader thing or a POS. What is it called? Terminal?
Yeah, the terminal. Terminal. They made us get a new terminal for it. We have it. But they actually came at not real much expense to us. But we were simple because I purposely, when we designed our own point of sale system, we did not integrate credit card transactions. The problem comes into getting this rolled out to people who have integrated legacy systems like hotels that it's swiping into a database style system or any retail establishment where they use central card processing into terminals and centralized servers. For example, Sears/Kmart, every single store does not do credit card processing. It goes back to their central data center for all their credit card processing from every single store. So because mm-hmm. they're all doing that, when you say, let's change it to chip, they're like, our infrastructure isn't ready. So it's mm-hmm. the major retailers that have a problem. They don't actually do any in-store processing. So right. it becomes – I understand from a technical standpoint because my friend works at the data center, and he would explain it to me how their credit processing works because their data center went down and how they ended up firing the chief technological officer.
Really?
Yes. Ooh. They had two data center failures in 1 week.
Whoa.
The second one, absolutely his fault.
Really?
He bought a used piece of equipment for the data center switchover for Sears.
Really?
To wow. save money. It cost them like millions for the second failure. He said literally like the one piece of hardware that he put a used one in essentially was like the root cause analysis of it.
Oh, my gosh. Terrible.
But it was interesting because of the central credit mm-hmm. card processing. You'd assume the store would just send it out like at the store level, but apparently they all just – that's the standard design is to bring it back to your data center and do the processing. Of course, that's why the honeypot's so sweet when you get in there. You're like, oh, the credit cards come to one place? Thank you, Sears. Thank you, hotels.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what they said. They went at Hyatt. They harvested the customer paid credit cards, including the expiration dates and verification codes, which is that's like the most valuable part of the credit card. Because if you want to use it online, you have to have the verification code and the expiration.
What they should do is once it's verified, they should get rid of that verification code. Or once the transaction is complete.
As big as Google and Apple and as much strength as they have, they've mm-hmm. not been able to get this to be adopted. And their systems work because they don't share your credit card.
What about PayPal? PayPal is sort of similar, isn't it? Too.
Mm-hmm. That's actually part of the book for Elon Musk is why he got out of the financial market. He found it to be a market that absolutely needs innovation, probably more so than any other market, and has his mm-hmm. comment on it. But there's absolutely – he does not have the strength to fight the banking systems and all the other systems that these backwards-thinking people – he rants and calls them names. And that was his biggest challenge in PayPal. It wasn't the technology. It was getting any change in the financial markets. They just like to do the things the way they do them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, right.
All right. All right, Tony.
And then the one other article I have is – DOS, DOS bug identified in, Ethereum's Geth software. And it's on the Eve, I'm reading this one. So they found it in the Geth software, and they've already put together a fix for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also a hard fork coming. So
a hard fork coming.
Yeah. So somebody that says hard fork on the horizon. Oh, horizon.
Right.
So the hard fork for Byzantium.
Byzantium.
Byzantium. That's it. Is it? Is that another cryptocurrency?
It probably could. Yes. Probably would be.
I can't keep track of all of them.
Yeah, right. I no longer keep track.
Please just bring back Kanye coin.
Kanye coin. It says it's expected to be forked or available on Sunday evening. What's the date of this article? From 12 hours ago. So it's this evening.
Tonight.
Yeah, if all you're right. Listening to today when we post the show.
I don't do anything with cryptocurrency, so I will be not even paying attention. Yeah, we
are definitely not the experts on this subject.
I just, yeah.
You well, know, I think I want to do an episode. We didn't do one on cryptocurrency, have we?
Mm-mm.
That's on my to-do list.
I would, okay, if we do an episode on it, I'll participate.
I will even go as far as I have a friend who's an expert. Mm-hmm. I'll see if he'd love, if you bring up any of that stuff.
Oh, I think that would be an interesting thing.
He's been doing and trading in it and building, he builds services on top of.
Trading in it.
Oh, yeah. He also builds services on top of Ethereum, like as a
shorting and selling and doing that kind of trading?
Everything related.
Okay.
He's also big into the Ethereum local meetup groups and things like that. I met a few of the people on here. I haven't made it to any of their meetup groups, but I've met the people outside of it at other.
Yeah, that could be Linux interesting. Stuff.
So that's blockchain work then?
Yes.
I was going to say, yeah, now blockchain makes sense.
I've got something interesting for that.
Yeah. Well, there's actually there's a new company out there now that is using blockchain for supply chain. They partner with the UN and they're doing supply chain auditing with applying blockchain technology.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, that'd be, okay. I want to read a little more into it at some point, but it'll be another interesting discussion of applying blockchain to things that are useful. So, anyways, moving back on to other news.
Yeah.
Before we get sidetracked again.
Well, just remember that there's an update coming out. So, update version
of what?
1.7.2 for Geth. G-E-T-H, I guess it's
Geth. I'm not familiar with it.
Yep.
So get that installed and updated.
Yes.
Get that. Did you say what you said, or is that what the article said?
No.
I need to know who to give the credit to.
I'll give it to you because I actually said get.
Oh, okay.
But Geth is way better.
Geth is better. That's right.
It's the Geth system part of it.
All right. Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you for your news items.
Thanks.
No, we really need to do a cryptocurrency one. Just a full fresh look. That way, every time we talk about it, we can just segue and go, now refer back to episode, to fresh looks this, and we'll have it on our notes for all the details. Now we're going to talk about the news.
And I think I told you, that DistroWatch has a DistroCurrency website. So what we'll do is we'll look at those and just say, we'll talk about those that episode. That'll be kind of fun.
There's a lot we could talk about with it. So.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead in the interest of continuing to move forward. I'm going to talk a little bit about a couple of news items that I've got. There is one that really caught my eye, and hopefully no one else here has it, but it's how the Federal Reserve Bank of New York navigates the supply chain of open source software. And it's your typical situation where they've got a wide group of developers and they've got mission critical applications. And so they want to have some kind of a standard set of tools and that type of thing. So what they do is they have employed various open source tools as far as those mission critical applications that they have. I thought that was really pretty good. So they want, obviously to standardize their base technologies, development tooling, and architectural models. So they said that every user interface was a snowflake, completely different. An end user might have 15 different interfaces. So and that can be kind of disconcerting, I think, if you're trying to be efficient. So, so they did that, and one of the things too that they had to take into consideration were the various licensing models, because when you take a look at I'll use the term open source licensing models, but that really encompasses a broad broad set of licenses from the very open BSD license to I think the slightly more the more restrictive GPL3. Mm-hmm. So, in for them, in their best interest, it was to go with the less restrictive, which certainly makes sense to me. So, the takeaway from all of this was that reusable software components and standardization provide greater efficiency while meeting the New York Fed's extreme security needs, because they got a lot of gold. Apparently. Restrictive licensing terms and weak support make some open source projects or some open source software a poor choice. So they had to really do some research just to selectively say, hey, this is going to work for us, or, you know, this won't work for us for, you know, security reasons or whatever. And then they said training courses by third-party providers can lead to inconsistencies. So what they ended up doing is they took and instead of using third-party stuff, they went ahead and took their trainers, and across the board, they've got a consistent training mechanism now for training their users. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The other article I've got here, I'm going to give a little shout-out birthday to KDE, which turned 21 yesterday. And yesterday was the measure of its birthday, because that was when the first email by Matthias I think I've got his Edrich, I think his name is, when he sent out the first email about KDE as a desktop, the cool desktop environment is what some people believe KDE really stands for. So I want to give a little shout out to that.
Should we call it a congrats with a capital K?
I think we should. I think we should, Tom. I appreciate that. That's clever.
Did they have a release party?
No, but you know, I was just thinking to myself, it's 21. We should have had a release party for it.
Birthday party.
We should have had a little cake, a little KDE cake. That would have been kind of
this
fun.
This is actually part of my
wouldn't
news.
Be cake if it's turning 21.
It'd be rum cake.
Rum cake.
Yes, rum cake. Actually, because this is in my news articles as well, which
KDE?
Is fine. Yeah, of course.
You mean, I'm glad I went before you.
You know, because KDE is the legal drinking age, like we said, but did you see the book they're offering?
No, I didn't.
There is a free book, Creative Commons, and it is KDE, 20 Years of KDE, Past, Present, and Future. It's a free ebook that you can download, and I'll put the link in the show notes. And it's
wait a minute, 20 years?
20. Well, the book
came out last year.
Yeah, but they brought it up,
that's
and it's
still
actually
reasonably.
Yeah, the URL is actually 20years.kde.org/book. So, yeah,
cool.
Yeah, clever. Yeah. But it's an entire ebook about the history of KDE.
Cool.
Yeah,
excellent. Well, Tom, thanks for that little tidbit.
And I like your logo.
What's that, KDE?
Yes.
Yeah, I love KDE.
Matter of fact, that's actually what the page is just you can scroll through all the logos they have.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really cool.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and move on. I found an interesting article in Extreme Tech. It's Microsoft's latest app update drives negative reviews in Windows Store. This came out on Friday the 13th. And I was thinking to myself, what could that be? Well, apparently they had some kind of an app. It was called Photos Add-on, and they said it's pretty much what you'd expect from the name. It's an add-on for the Windows Photo app. The app description, however, doesn't make the functionality clear at all. Here's what the description for this app said. It said Photo app downloadable content for all users. That's all the information you get. Now, as soon as this app appeared, I guess users they started to vent because the review titles included things like install without permission, didn't ask for this. So apparently it kind of just got itself jammed down into their system. Mm. So, and, you know, people, there should really be informed consent. If something's going to happen to a system that you have, you should be aware of it.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, a lot of tracking stuff wouldn't be on there if we knew about it, because we would say no. But anyway, and by the way, too, the total size was over 400 megabytes. So I'm sure it's a little add-on. The final install size looks to be around 150. So 150 megabytes. So it says it's not unreasonable to be annoyed at Microsoft adding bloat to your machine. But it's just an update to a pre-installed app. Still, this looks bad. Microsoft should be better at anticipating such things. It would seem to me that they should be, because, you know, they get blowback for those kinds of things.
Yeah, really.
And I think if you err on the side of if you are biased to the side on the side of transparency, I think people will cut you some slack.
Mm-hmm. I think this is where Microsoft is like the most confusing company, because we look at anything on the Windows side and you go, it's as clear as mud all the time of whatever's going on in Windows. It's like a mystery, even to them, because they have press releases that are vague. And then, you know, you have entire podcasts dedicated to sorting out what a Microsoft press release meant. And then you have the side that's going open source, and they're seeing a lot of success. And I think that's what's very interesting. Like the part of Microsoft that we do like, and we're going to keep embracing on this podcast, I guess, as long us are doing it right, is the open source side, where they give clear answers and transparent. We're doing this, and we're doing it open source, and we're doing these things. And Windows is like, we did a thing, vaguely.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fact that it was kind of forced on users, too. They, you know, they were just saying, not cool. Stop adding apps I don't want or need.
Yeah.
You know, that really
it's a disaster.
Yeah. So anyway, so there was that one. And I think I've got a couple of others, but in the interest of time, I'll probably just bypass them. One was, and we talked about cryptocurrency, and I'll just make this comment. I believe we may have talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I was informed before the show started. Over 500 million PCs are secretly mining cryptocurrency. They go to some popular websites.
Crypto malware.
There's some kind of a little script or something that just runs in the background, and it uses your PC to mine for currency.
Showtime, the TV thing.
Yeah.
The TV.
The network.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Showtime
was affected by this. The Pirate Bay was testing it out. This was a piece of quote unquote malware called CoinHive. And you would go to this website and JavaScript would run and spin up your processor or core to 100% or as much as it could grab. And it would mine Monero coin on behalf of the website owner who placed this malicious JavaScript on their page. So if you're one of the people who go around using NoScript or Ghostery or something like that, well, congrats, you're already not affected by it.
Yay.
But for everybody else, that's pretty rough, especially when it's on a potentially popular website like Showtime.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I use Ghostery, and just to even up the ante, I also use Privacy Badger. So it creates problems for me.
Yeah, I use Privacy Badger, too.
Yeah.
And it does.
That's pretty good job. Things,
yeah.
It does. So anyway, but those are my stories and news stories for this episode.
Excellent.
So I've got something interesting that I found. It's called ACDC. It's the Active Cyber Defense Certainty Act that Congress is beginning to talk about. I love the name.
I was thinking of the band ACDC.
But, my gosh, it's going to be probably dumb when it comes out. If it ever does,
if
you get hacked, you then have the legal recourse to hack back.
Yeah,
really.
And you can deploy beacons, whatever that means, to trace where an attack is coming from, and leave your beacon there.
You talking about beacons like those 1x1 pixel GIFs that are web beacons?
I have no idea what that means.
And this is
because
where
it's lawyers.
It's lawyers.
Right.
Lawyers have. That don't have GitHub accounts or any knowledge of technical things. Well, that comment will make sense in episode 256. So,
yeah.
Future thoughts.
Yeah.
I started looking at some of that, and it is amazing because I actually did a talk about called Protecting Digital You to Business Owners, but that included people who worked in government, was one of those people. They are so disconnected of how all this works. They still think in very vague military terms, and they just think you can apply, cyber warfare is like military warfare, just different kind of gun, right? No, it doesn't even work the same way.
I pull out my NES Zapper. I plug it into my USB to NES Zapper attachment port. And then I shoot cyber criminals, you know.
Now I want a light gun to destroy code on my screen. Phil, we have a project.
Can you get that on Amazon?
Something cool I saw was Google, over the next 5 years, they're going to be donating $1 billion to help train people for tech jobs and all the various different aspects of the industry. So that's impressive. Say what you want about Google and how much they're tracking us. At least they're helping the citizens of the country, I guess.
Yeah,
in a way.
I was actually on another podcast, the Security Jabber, and the guys from CBI are part of that. And that's their big challenge for a security company. And they said, we can't find smart people. That's like what's your number one challenge?
They
find enough smart people. They started their own training institute just to try to produce more of them. Like that's like the business strategy of we've got all this demand on cybersecurity. We can't find enough. You know, these guys are all overworked. And that's actually a common thing. A lot of people in the cybersecurity world is just coming at them so fast. And there's so much to do. So they end up working all these really long shifts.
Burnout is
huge.
Burnout is ridiculous.
And let's cut those HB1 visas. Yeah. Be one
well, that's
Jesus.
Actually, and it's that... only exasperating the problem. But even with that, there's just not enough people to work in cybersecurity. The threats are getting greater faster than the ramp ups on the other side. So definitely a concern. Definitely cool that Google's doing that.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing that I found, it's not exactly news, but it's still, it was
still
news
cool.
to me that it existed. It's the open source game clones. I believe it's osgameclones.com or osgameclones.org. So all of my favorite games, such as Age of Empires or Jagged Alliance or Worms, Zork even, there's nice. Hundreds of games on this website that have open source clones in some state of completion. But the point is that you can play them on your Linux kernel. Mm. So there's a really nifty one that's been on Hacker News lately. It's Roller Coaster Tycoon 2.
Ooh.
The engine can take the assets from the Roller Coaster Tycoon disk or executable, and you can play a working version of it on Linux. And that's awesome.
Wow.
I grew up with Roller Coaster Tycoon, and that's good to see other people being able to play it.
Mm.
Roller Coaster Tycoon.
So fun.
It reminds me of Linux Tycoon, that Brian Lundvik stuff.
There is on here Z Doom, Pro Boom, and all the other Doom derivatives, which is exciting.
Oh, mm. My wife got one of the newest MacBooks for her job, and I wanted to
put the Doom in the
mod
bar.
Doom and put it on the little touch bar, but she wouldn't let me.
You know, I've seen Doom running on the touch bar of that, and that's really cool. I don't know. I like Zork too, so I'm glad that Zork's in. Anyways, is that all you got for the news?
That's awesome. All. That's all the news and olds that I've got.
No problem. I added it to the show notes. It's osgameclones.com.
Thank you very much.
So speaking of drive-by downloads and bitcoins and all that fun stuff, can we just agree that they should just put circus music as their hold music at Equifax? I don't want to bring them up every week.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Like, there's always something fun going on. I'm only going to give them a brief mention. They don't need any
more
dishonorable.
For the second one?
They don't need any more dishonorable mentions, but basically they had a drive-by flash downloader on their site.
They're not the only one. One of the other credit bureaus was doing
TransUnion?
Yes, they were doing the exact same thing.
Mm. So, yeah, big mess there.
Yeah.
So, the other story was the Retro ThinkPad, and this is near and dear to my heart. Did anyone see this?
Yes, I did.
That's exciting.
That blue enter button.
The blue enter button.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Don't give us better technology. Give us a blue enter button. These are the things we care about. So
I'm not familiar with it.
Someone knows our geek hearts. Caden Live and KD Plasma, all those updates we mentioned already.
Yeah.
I will admit about the Caden Live, my only comment really is it is so stable. So my video I did was 4 hours to record, and then I edited it down to 1 hour and 10 minutes. And that was always a risky thing when you get these very large-scale projects in Caden
Live. Yes,
it crashed 0 times last night. And there are
last
night.
So that must be the latest version.
Yeah, I was running the latest version, but it probably took me. So I was here at the shop for 5 hours. People don't always realize. Like, they think I record a video. I'm like, yeah, I do. I record 4 hours of video and condense it down to 1 hour video, which also means it makes 2 more hours of editing. But it never even crashed once during the entire edit process. And I don't think I've ever edited a video that long. And I click save a lot. I mean, I'm like control S in all the time. And
oh, you have to save spam. You learned that from playing video games as a kid.
Yeah, saves things all the time. But I'm just really impressed with the stability of the project. I just want to throw that comment out there. Like, it is a I also used a feature I never used before. I had to blur a license plate, and it did the whole tracking thing like it's supposed to. Like, I selected license plate, and I blurred the entire crash into our building. It was a old guy. He hit our curb really hard, and it shook the building. And he stayed committed to it, because instead of backing up, he just powered through it with his Cadillac. He rode the whole edge of our curb.
Oh my gosh.
We have cameras on the outside of the building. I don't know if you guys knew that. And they recorded audio, which had that satisfying crunch in there, and we edited it on Caden Live. And I'm like, I should blur out his license plate. So I did.
Oh, my goodness.
It didn't damage our building. It just took all the paint off the curb and his car and the wheels. And
what is that called in Caden Live to to blur something or track it.
It's like obscure tracking or tracking obscure. I'm going to do a video on it because now that I understand how it works. You select it, you analyze, you have to do an analysis of video, and it will just follow that object around and keep it blurred. It does it for faces. It does it for object selection.
Yeah, that's a nice feature.
Yeah.
By the way, too, I was just going to mention, you're talking about video editing, Cinelera. DistroWatch just had a kind of a list of the latest packages. It looks like they came out with their latest release. So,
oh, cool.
Just wanted to say that.
So who's ready to talk about kaputs?
Kaputs. I think you are, Tom.
So what basically happened, several years ago, Eugene Kaspersky, and he had discussed, and everyone says, I've never met the guy, but people who are security researchers say he's very genuine, and they have a really top-notch team of security researchers there, although they are in Russia, which, you know, we're in the U.S. and we're not friends like we used to be, not that we're ever really friends, but anyways, they have a product that is long time running and generally was a well-regarded security program for antivirus and things like that, but they also had admitted they were under attack several years ago. Well, it turns out they were being investigated by an Israeli security research, and they were researching them because of what happened very recently, and I think as Washington Post broke the story on this, but there's, you know, all kinds of – everyone's covering it now. They were using the Kaspersky system to notice if you had documents on there that looked like they were sensitive in nature, government documents. And apparently the whole story revolves around an NSA contractor who took his work home and wasn't supposed to. So he's working on all kinds of NSA documents, and that machine was running Kaspersky. That machine sent alerts back and copies and screenshots of the documents and things that he was working on. So basically, Kaspersky was infiltrated, is the allegation here, and were sending back all the information when they found something of high value to part of their cloud product as part of the feedback on it. Now, they're denying it at Kaspersky, and I don't know what their official statement. This literally just broke the other day, so I think they're really preparing all this. But it's kind of the end of Kaspersky. So we've seen the government issue a do not use Kaspersky, which actually affected some of my clients who do government work. They literally, if they were using it, had to uninstall it right away. And this happened a few months ago because we knew something was coming. So this story's been in the works, but no one knew why. But we knew something was up when a document, if you fall under these government standards, you cannot use Kaspersky as your antivirus, bottom line. So my clients, some of them just, they don't even think about what antivirus they use. I know you take care of my antivirus. Are you using Kaspersky? I'm like, no, we don't worry, we don't. And they're like, okay, making sure, because we got a notice in the mail that we can't use it. This actually happened several months ago, but no, nothing more attached to why. Now we think we know the why. Now, this also goes to, if I can't see the code, I can't trust it. And we don't really have any good open source antivirus, and no one even say ClamAV. It sucks. I'm sorry. Yeah, it feels like, but we, yeah, right. And I'm not wrong. So if Kaspersky went open source, that would be some saving to the company. I really doubt they would. I heard that in a rumor mill, but I didn't hear it from Kaspersky. I think this is because this is 2017 attack of the supply chain. You know, we've seen this with CCleaner a few weeks back, but this is a scary thing to any government. She's going, I think this is going to really push people towards open source, because if they can't really look at the code that's running and understand what it's doing, this could happen even at other companies, not just Kaspersky, who happened to be based in Russia, which somehow Russia leveraged things into the system and was signed by their code that did this. This goes out a lot bigger. Of a supply chain attack. Like, what if someone infiltrates Norton or McAfee or any of these other companies that are rather large in the antivirus market and the closed source market? I think it'd be really hard to infiltrate the supply chain of Microsoft because there's so many developers involved. And, you know, them being the big company they are, they, you know, someone would be hard pressed to slip something into Windows 10 and someone not talk about it. Because one thing we knew, meeting all the developers on the floor, they love to talk about what they're doing. And that's just a hard thing to do. But Kaspersky, small group of people, one person slips in something. It happened at CCleaner. There's really not that many developers on there, and they infected the build machine, and that's what slipped it in for there. So how do we combat this? We know how to do it in the Linux world. It's open source, and we don't worry about something being added in and spies and watches and sends our documents out. But I don't know what the solution is for the security world, but there, I bet a lot of people are rethinking how security does.
We still have to worry about that in the open source world, though.
Yeah.
So we pull our packages, whether they're Debian packages, they're Pac-Man files, RPMs, tarballs, what have you, from someplace on the internet, hopefully over a encrypted channel. And then what happens if there's no GPG key that ties that code back to some arbitrary person that you trust, that you say, okay, you know this name, and they are one of the leads of a project. So
you install it anyway.
Yeah. So some people do. Some people put third-party repositories on their computers, on their servers. Where do you start drawing the line? What happens when you need to get the software that you need to do whatever project? And then it comes from who knows where.
And this is, you know, the whole reputation of the PPAs. And this is why Debian, I'll say it right now, they have the whole, you know, repeatable build process, yes, which I think is at like 98%. And what that means is they're taking the source code and making sure that when you compile the source code, they give you the parameters by which it was compiled, you create a 100% match binary exactly the same. So now you can even check to make sure those. But like Phil said, if there's something I need and I'm using a third-party PPA, which I am because of KDE Neon, I want the latest of the KDE Caden Live. So I have that repository added. And what if someone at Caden Live gets infected? Now that comes down the supply chain to me.
Now, another thing to worry about is not even if there's some vulnerability that's introduced inside of the package itself. What if it's inside of the compiler? There was a problem. There's a proof of concept that someone created with Clang, the C language compiler, that a compiler fault can introduce a bug into your compiled application that was not inside of your actual code that you started to compile.
Right.
So then you have to, we all have this trust of the tools, but what if it's the tools that are the problem?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then how do you track that back?
Yes.
You know, so exactly. The problem was GCC that they had that bug and they tracked it back, and well, GCC is compiled with GCC. So you had to backtrack.
The bug was recursive. Yeah.
So they only had to put it into one version like 10 years ago, and then it's been in every version since.
Yeah, and you have to go back and recompile. Oh, yeah. What a mess.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm going off the grid.
I have to recompile my compiler. You know, there's something to be said for that.
I'm going to have a little garden, have some chickens.
Have some chickens.
That's the dream.
Listen to AM radio.
You know, it is one of those things. There was a great discussion about the Koreans and their whole missile program and how unhackable it was. It's for a reason, not because of security, not because they do it. They're just the most offline country. So they because we rely on hacking tools that think you're online, and NSA contractors who take their work home and put it on Kaspersky, simply not a problem in North Korea. They don't have computers at home. You know, there is not the KGB years ago. You can look this article up, but they went offline. That was their security solution. Is they said, we don't think that we can handle it. So they went back to typewriters to type up documents and went back to the older spying methods. That's their solution. We just don't trust anything. And this was like 2007 or 8. And there's a great article write-up about it. Like, they aren't joking. This isn't a joke headline.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. Wow. They just said, we just moved it all offline and moved typewriters because, you know what? Everyone relies on technology to hack it. If we don't have technology, all of a sudden we don't worry about it much. So it's I guess you could really sleep at night knowing that I typed up the document and hand-delivered it to you.
Can you trust the ink? What if it's invisible ink? Now we have to forge our own typewriters.
That's a feature.
Yeah. And they can still – this is what's interesting is all the mathematics and the math ciphers can still be applied. So they can still type something, put it together, you know, similar to an Enigma machine in a very low-tech way. And now the math we already know is strong, but now the transportation method of doing it kind of analog like that becomes very interesting. I can still send the message. I can still be hidden and obscured in plain sight with good encryption and no worried about hacking the keyboard it was typed on because there's not a computer attached to it because it typed it. Mm. So it's a really interesting – certain things may have to go offline. But
yeah, that's for sure.
So I don't know what the big solution is to it, but I tell people anymore, don't – I did a talk call on protection, and one of the things I say, people always ask me about antivirus. I'm like, no, don't. Just use Windows Defender. If you're a consumer, use it and spend your money on a backup. There's where your money should be spent, backing up your stuff. Not I don't find that Windows Defender is any better than any of these other ones. As a matter of fact, they clearly have introduced new security flaws with some of these antiviruses that you didn't even have without the antivirus. We're looking at you, Trend Micro, who had a – huge flaw. You can only get infected with a virus if you had Trend Micro. Think about that a minute.
Is that a feature at that point?
Yeah, there's a question.
Yes. Something to ponder.
Something to ponder.
As we
ponder the end.
Yeah. So I guess that pretty much is it for our news, right?
I think so.
Did Tony find a song while we were newsing it up here?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Did we go on long enough for you to find one?
So there was a FreeBSD release, right?
Yes. Song's coming out in December.
Is it?
November.
Okay,
I don't think it's available.
So my thought was, look at the OpenBSD songs.
Yeah.
And the latest one, they call it
Would Winter... you say FreeBSD? I meant OpenBSD's song is coming in, I think, next month.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought, let's play the last one that they had.
Okay.
So it's called Winter 95. I have no clue what it's about. I just now looked at it.
Probably about a season and maybe 12 years ago.
The
Windows 95.
Oh, right. Winter 95. There
I know,
you
but
go.
I heard Windows.
Here we go. I had a Type 4 keyboard, bought it with my Songbird station, hacked on it till my fingers played well, was the winner of 95. So in typical fashion with our show, if you're listening live on YouTube, we will have the full version of the song in our edited show and links and everything. But it's on the OpenBSD webpage for their songs. If you just Google OpenBSD and song, then it'll get you over there, and it's song for version 6.1.
All right.
All right. So you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 253.
Kaputsky.
That's right. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show at smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. K. Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.